sitting out. Not many people are coming at the moment, so there is not so much turbulence, and we can start to practice, put all our effort in our practice. It is important. When we look at the world at the moment, it is an upheaval. The war in Ukraine, it probably erupts, you know, in the world war. And then, what is the best thing for us to do? Sit down and practice. Not concerned about what's happening in the world. Even if we die, the best way to die is to die while we are practicing. Because then we are aware of what is going on, and then we might have the chance to direct our citta to the next life. Otherwise we just follow our karma that we have. If we die unexpectedly, for instance people die in a car crash or an airplane crash, they die unexpectedly, they are not prepared, so the citta will take them to their destination where their karma is the strongest. And when we remember what the Lord Buddha said about how many people are going to hell, how many people are going to heaven, then we do have to practice a lot. What did he say? 70% of the human race has no chance because they have no interest in any kind of religion. They have no interest in bettering themselves. They have only one way to go, and that is hell. The 30% of the human race has a chance because they sometimes get interested in the religion, sometimes they keep the precepts, and sometimes they don't keep the precepts. So they have the chance, you know, to come back as a human being or go to heaven. But most of us won't. Yeah. But here we are here at a place where we practice. We put all our effort in our practice. And that is the place here. We have no other things to do. So we can put all our effort in our practice to make the most out of it. And the most out of it is getting the mind calm so that there are no thoughts. No memory is coming up. There is just the experience of being. Only then can we see clearly. Otherwise, if we are constantly in our thoughts and constantly in our memories, that is the thing that creates our world that we live in. We live in our thoughts, we live in our memories, but we don't realize the reality that we actually live in. Because all the time, the moment we judge something, we live in our thoughts. This is good, this is like this, this is a house, this is a tree, this is a woman, this is a man. Huh? That's why we live in our thoughts, but we don't live in reality. We don't really see what is going on. But when we practice, then we can stop the mind engine. Stop it from turning around, turning between thoughts and turning between memories. And then we can see what is going on. And there's actually not so many things are going on. There's just this pure experience. This pure experience of being. Without anybody taking hold of the experience that we have. And this is something that we have to practice when we do our samatha practice. When we do get the mind calm, we keep it on one of the objects of meditation, be it the breath around the tip of the nose, knowing that the breath goes in, knowing that the breath goes out, knowing that the breath is long, knowing that the breath is short, knowing that the breath is deep, knowing that the breath is shallow. And we don't try to manipulate the breath, we don't We don't try to make it calm, or we don't try to make it long or short. We observe. And that is one of the most difficult things for us to do, because whatever we observe, we want to control. We want to control the breath, or when we take the Buddha, we want to control the Buddha. And that's where we have to, where we always have to remind ourselves, it is observing and observing. And if you don't know what it means to observe the breath or to observe the Buddha, then let's have a look at nature. Let's observe animals that are around us. No matter if there are ants, no matter if there are these squirrels, we just observe them and see what they are doing. We cannot control them, but we can observe them. And that is the same way that we should observe our breath. Or we observe the Buddha. We just observe them. Don't make any conclusions about it. Ah, now the breath is not in the way. The only thing that we have to check on, are we with the breath or are we not with the breath? Are we with the Buddha or not with the Buddha? That's where we correct him. When we see the mind is wandering off, then we go back to the breath, or we go back to the Buddha, or if some other people, you know, might choose Dhamma or Sangha, one of these words, one of these meditation objects, and then we just go back. And that is all what we have to do. And then we have to know about the breath. That is the quality of sati. Knowing about the object that we observe. Just like when you observe the animals around us. We observe them and know actually what we're doing. We don't have to think about what they are doing. So why do we have to think about what is the breath like? We don't. We know if the breath is long. We know if the breath is short. We know if the breath is rough. Or we know if the breath is subtle. Or, in the end, when we get really calm, we know that the breath stops. And only then, that is the only time when we jump to the knowingness. Into the knowingness. And then we go into Apanna Samadhi. In the deep state of Samadhi where everything disappears. Where we see this world really does not exist. Only when the senses come back, the senses from the body come back, then the world starts to exist again. But before that, as long as we are in Apanna Samadhi, the world ceases to exist for us, even though our body still is in this world. When we come back into the body, you know, the world slowly, you know, evolves again. Builds itself up. We ourselves build ourselves up. Our self is created again. The first thing, you know, the first thoughts and the first memories, and then slowly the memories are coming back, who I am or what I am, where I am, and so on and so on. If you have rested long enough, you know, in Apanna Samadhi, this is what can happen. We see how this world is evolved within our thoughts and memories. And that's where we see, or that's where we might understand the teaching of the Lord Buddha, that this is a delusion, that we live in an illusion, in an illusion that is created by our mind, which is created by our senses. And our path out, the Fourth Noble Truth, the path out to the end of dukkha, or to enlightenment, or whatever you want to call it, is the path of practice, and the practice of sila, the practice of. And when we are here in the monastery, we keep the 8 precepts. But the first precept is not to harm any living being. The second precept, not to take what is not given. The third precept is no sexual misconduct. That means any kind of not say it otherwise. I mean, if we are married, then we are keeping faithful to our married partner. If we are not married and are in a relationship, then we keep faithful to this relationship. Sexual misconduct is also using somebody, you know, because of one's authority, just like a teacher and a student, or a father or mother and her children. This is all sexual misconduct. Or boss and the secretary, that is also sexual misconduct. Using somebody because, you know, because of our authority, because he is dependent on us. That is all sexual misconduct. The fourth precept is no lies, no harsh speech. That is for us quite difficult sometimes. Yeah? We like to lash out, you know, with our words to other people. That can be dangerous. That can be a breaking up one of our precepts. Especially, you know, if you tell the other person what we know, it is not true. It's a lie. Even white lies, even if we want to comfort somebody, is still a lie. So we should not do that. What did the Lord Buddha do? He didn't say anything. Even if he knew, he was asked, you know, he was asked where the queen is, you know, after she is dead, and she just kept silent. He knew she was in hell. So he didn't answer. He didn't want to upset the king. But after 7 days, he answered because she knew that she was in heaven. And then he said, she's in heaven. So no white lies to comfort somebody. That's also against the precepts. And the fifth one is no alcohol, no drugs. Alcohol, it is clear. Drugs is whatever makes us unmindful. The definition in the Western sense, drugs, you know, I mean, they think, you know, coffee, or they count coffee or tea as being a drug, or nicotine being a drug. No, that is not a drug that makes us unmindful. It's a drug that helps us, when I use the Western term, it's a drug that helps us to keep awake, And we need that more than often, To keep us awake, you know, when the practice, you know, when we're slowly getting calm and then the mind drifts away. And then we need something, you know, to wake us up. Of course, if we have a pond of cold water, then we can jump into the cold water, you know, that keeps us awake. But if we don't have that, and if it is hot like this, I mean, then just use something, you know, to make you wake up. And if it is coffee or tea or nicotine, that is fine, It's not against the precepts, and it is not against the rules of the monks, because the pachitya is the same thing as the five precepts, or as the fifth precepts. No alcohol, no drugs, everything that makes us unmindful. And I haven't seen people, you know, I mean, drinking coffee or drinking tea, you know, and out of the rush of this coffee, or tea, nicotine, they kill somebody. But that can happen, you know, when you drink alcohol, I mean, you don't have any more control over your emotions, But that won't happen, you know, when you have tea or coffee or nicotine. I hope this is clear, the five precepts, and for us, you know, the six precepts, what is this? The third precept, no sexual conduct at all, Men, you know, don't interact with women, and the women don't interact with the men. What is the sixth, seventh, and eighth? What is the, no meal after, no food after midday. That is very clear for us. No food after. We have only one meal in the morning, and then there is no food after it. Panna is okay. Whatever is allowed is panna, as energy, giving energy, or as something that makes the stomach get yalapai. What is yalapai? Panrich, what is yalapai? Relieving medicine, that relieves of stomach ache or relieves of anything, Medicine in the normal sense. Not sleeping on high beds, what is this? No perfumes and no music and no dancing and so on, something like that. I haven't looked at them for a long time. So something like that. So these eight precepts we keep. Yeah? So what is the fourth noble truth? The path that leads to the end of dukkha. Yeah? It is the sila. And then it is samadhi. And that's what we are concentrating on right now. Most of us, you know, are just training the mind to get completely calm, completely calm. Yeah? In the morning we wake up. And then we make up our mind. The first thought should be, yeah, am I with my Buddha or am I not with my Buddha? Am I with the breath or not with the breath? Yeah? And then I return to the breath. I don't think about what kind of dreams I had in the night. I replace all the things that come into my mind, you know, with our object of meditation. Yeah? And then we go and do chongkram, we do walking meditation, we still keep to our object, then we do sitting meditation, we still keep to our object, and once the mind gets calm, yeah, once we see that the mind gets calm, and you can stay, you know, with an object without deviating from this object for about 10 to 15 minutes, then we can start with investigation of the body. Yeah? I mean, we attach so much attached to the body. How many bodies did we have? How many different kinds of body? I mean, how many billions of lives have we lived already? Yeah? And if we don't do anything, we will have the next life and the next life. And there's no end to it. It is a hamster wheel that we're constantly treading. We constantly turn around in this hamster wheel. And the Lord Buddha was the only one who showed us that there is a door open where we can escape from the hamster wheel. That means we can escape from the samsara vata, the circle of birth and death. We don't like to die. Nobody likes to die. But the moment we die, we are born again if we don't do anything, if we don't find the way out. And for us as human beings, this is the most precious opportunity now to find a way out. And if we put all our effort, if we still cannot make it, you know, at least, you know, if we have our effort of practice until the last moment of, until we die, yeah, I mean, we are very likely, you know, to become in a fortunate place where we can continue our practice in our next life. But if we want to take a rest, it's so difficult, let me make a rest, and then we die, we don't know where we're going to end up. Yeah? So think about it. Yeah? We have to expect death to come any moment. It can come any moment. Yeah? And we don't know what is going to happen. Yeah? If there is a world war, I mean, we don't know how much we are affected. Most likely, Thailand is not so much affected, and other countries. But all the European and Western and Chinese countries will be very heavily affected. Yeah? So for us, you know, to be here, you know, in a place where there is probably very little effect on us, we can stay and practice and practice and practice. Yeah? And that is something, even if we live in Europe, even if people, you know, who listen to this, and live in Europe or live in any kind of state where the war will commence, then it's still the best thing, you know, for us to do practice, 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 not being interested. Yeah, just be, you know, am I with my Buddha? Am I not with my Buddha? Am I with my breath? And then I return to the breath. Yeah, until the mind gets calm. A mind that is afraid of this, I mean, never makes the right decision. A mind that is completely calm sees all the opportunities, sees all the possibilities, how we can behave in this moment. But if we think about it, if we use our memories and our thoughts, you know, to find out the best possibility, we'll never find it out. Only a calm mind, you know, that is free of fear, that is free of thoughts and free of memories, sees completely clearly what are the options. Most people, you know, don't see the options. And we are so fortunate to be in a place, yeah, where we can practice this without being disturbed what is going on in the world. Think about the people, you know, who are at the moment living in fear in Ukraine, or people in Europe who live in fear because they think that the war will, yeah, continue over Europe. What choice do they have? They're constantly, you know, constantly afraid. Yeah? What is happening? But we don't have to be afraid, and they don't have to be afraid. Yeah? If they start to practice, you know, and get the mind calm, and then they see what kind of opportunities there are, yeah? Real opportunities. And there's always one opportunity for them to see, you know, the right opportunity. But when we are in fear, when we are afraid, yeah, we never make the right decision. Our fear, our decisions are based, you know, based on memory, based on previous experience. So let's do our best effort, you know, to get calm, to see, yeah, to see a mind free of thoughts and memories. Yeah, see this. Huh? I mean, it is a little wonder. It's not the wonder where we see that the whole world collapses or diminishes or it disappears. Huh? But we can see, you know, we can see the world of experience that is completely free of any judgment, that is completely free of thoughts and memories. You know, we just experience, yeah? There still might be a few thoughts, but then we see the thoughts as thoughts, and we see the memories as memories, and they are so far away, you know, we just see them, just like we see the clouds, you know, they don't bother us. So let's go into the state, you know, and then progress from there on. Then we still keep on our Buddha, we still keep on our breath. Lots of people say that the breath will disappear, and then what shall I do when the breath disappears? When the breath disappears, we should get our object back, the breath. Yeah? The breath disappears because we have no interest in the breath. That's why the breath disappears. It doesn't disappear, you know, because... because it gets so subtle. Yeah? When the breath gets subtle, our awareness has to get subtle. That's the only thing. The breath doesn't disappear, or the Buddha doesn't disappear, or the Buddha, I don't see the Buddha anymore. No, our interest in the Buddha or our interest in the breath has disappeared. And that's what we have to revive again. That's where we have to recollect, what is our meditation object? Okay, Buddha. Am I with the Buddha or not? Am I with the breath or not? That is the only question we should ask ourselves when we do kamata. Or, when the pain becomes so strong, then let's do investigation of the pain. What is pain? We are, all our life we have been running away from the pain. We never wanted, you know, to investigate pain. We always run to the doctor, we run to our mom, give us something, you know, I'm in pain, give me something, you know, to relieve the pain. Huh? That's what we have been doing all day long, all life long. Huh? Now we want to know what actually is pain. Huh? So we go and look. Yeah? Just like we had before, we had the object of the Buddha or of the breath, now we go into the object of pain. Yeah? Where is the pain? Huh? What location? Yeah? Where is it? Is it there? And then we look at it. Yeah? Is it anicca, anatta, and dukkha? Yeah? Well, dukkha is no problem. You know, we see it. Yeah? We don't like it. Yeah? But we actually have to like. We actually have to like the pain. Yeah? We actually have to embrace pain, to feel it, to know exactly how does pain feel like. Huh? We don't know it. We see it, and we don't want it. You know, and then that's the end of investigation. Now we have to embrace it. We really have to feel it, yeah? The real, detailed, subtle feeling of pain. What is it like? Yeah? And then we can ask the question, where is it located? Yeah? Is it changing? Yeah? Is it anicca? Yeah? And then we see, you know, it is changing. Yeah? Where is it located? Is it in the skin? Is it in the tendons? Is it in the muscles? Where is the pain? Yeah? And don't allow any answers that come from the kilesas that are coming up to creep into the mind. Yeah? We should not allow it, because they say, oh yeah, because you sit uncomfortable. Huh? And that's why the pain comes. The pain must be in the muscles, you know, and so on. And then remember the flight from your home country here to Thailand. You sat there for 7, 8, 10 hours, yeah? And there was no pain. And now you sit for half an hour and there's suddenly pain. So get to know what pain is. Get to know. And if you come close with your investigation to the truth of pain, then you will notice something very interesting. That the pain disappears at this place and appears in another place. And then you go to the next place where it appears again, and then you ask the same question until you come very close to the truth. And so you follow the points of pain until it shows you where it's coming from. And only then have you understood, have you understood what pain is. You have not yet gone through the pain, through the pain of death. There are three stages of pain of death. That the breath stops, that is the first pain of breath, where all the air goes out of the next stage of death is where there's fire, the whole body is on fire. And the third stage of breath where all the elements are torn apart. That once you've gone through all these three stages of death, why should you be afraid of death? People are not really afraid of death. They're mostly afraid of the pain of death. Because that is as painful, that is a little bit more painful than the birth. But we can't remember the pain of birth, can you? The mothers probably remember the pain of birth, giving birth. Do we remember the pain of birth going through this very tight channel, and coming out? Some of us, some of the kids die, while they are going through this channel, and others, and we survive, And if you want to go back, so that is investigation of pain. The investigation of the body, we think about our life, That is something what we can do even with little sati. We think about, when we were born, what did we do then? We learned to walk. Let's go back to this experience, learning to walk. Then let's go back to the experience, learning to talk. Then we went to kindergarten, or then we went to primary school. Let's go back to this experience. Until we became 18, until we could, until our education, our primary education was finished, then some of us went to university. Let's go through these stages. How many years did we have to prepare this body so that we could use it at full strength? And how many years does the strength last of this body? 30 years. At most 30 years. And then with 50, slowly the strength of the body diminishes until we die. So we can say about the human life, we educate this body, or we train this body for 18 years. Then we can use it for 30 years with lots of strength, and with all its strength. And then we slowly wait to decay for 40 years. And then if anybody thinks about the next life as a human being, it will be the same. Is it so much fun? What do we get? And in these 30 years, what do? We work for our living. And this is so much fun. Think about it. And then think about death. And we don't know where we go. We don't know where we end up. We might end up in one of these 31 realms of existence. One of the realm of existence is hell. The other realm is the ghost realm or the demon realm. Then the animal realm, then the human realm, and then 25 different stages of heavenly realms. That's where we can end up. But even these realms are not forever. When we finished our realm of the heavenly realm, where are we going then? Probably to hell. Because Where we go, it depends on our karma that we have created. And the karma that we have created, we are creating right now. With every good deed, you know, we create good karma. With every bad deed, the moment we go against the five precepts, that's a bad deed. A monk that goes against his 227 rules, it's a bad deed. We create bad karma that we probably have to go to hell for. Lungta Mahabodh, some people think about, you know, I mean, that when you ordain as a monk or as a Michi, you don't go to hell, yeah? And that's not true. When Lungta Mahabodh went to hell, he said, oh, the hell is full of yellow robes, yeah? Wherever he looked, you know, he saw yellow robes, yeah? Huh? I mean, monks are human beings, so I mean, they do just the same thing as lay people, yeah? They go against the rules, they go against the precepts. Yeah? And that's where they end up. Yeah? So, I mean, just to ordain as a monk, you know, to be saved from hell, that is not the way. We have to make our, yeah? We have to make our journey, yeah? To the stage where we can be sure that we don't go to hell. And that stage is the first stage of enlightenment. It's called Sotapanna, stream enterer. A stream enterer never goes again to hell. He comes back as a human being or he goes to the Devaram. But to open this gate, and that is the gate out of the hamster wheel, we have to actually open it. That's what we are trying to do now, but then we have to pass through this gate. Yeah? Not looking at amazement at this gate, oh, wonderful gate, you know, and then don't pass through. We have to pass through this gate, this gate of Sotapanna. And then we are saved. And then at most, you know, we have seven more lives to live until we reach arahantship, or the complete end of it. Okay? Enough for today. Yeah, I mean, it's a reminder for us, you know, to, yeah, especially now at this time, you know, where the world is really in upheaval, to practice and practice and practice and not be concerned about anything else. Huh? Then, if you are with our Buddha or not, don't let the kilesas fool you, you know, with all the thoughts and memories, oh, I should do this, oh, I should do this, oh, I should go here, or I should go there. No. Wherever you go, you take your problems with you. Yeah? They don't go away. They actually, your problems actually lead you to the next place. So, put all the effort in your practice. Get the mind calm until there's no more thought. When there's no more thought, and you can stay there long enough, then do investigation of the body. I mean, look at the body, you know, I mean, get out of the body and have a look at the body if you can. Yeah? If you can't do it, you know, I mean, disassemble the body into its bits and pieces, lay it out in front of you, with your eyes closed until you see everything. Yeah? And then you assemble it again, and then you disassemble it, to see that the body is not self, that the body is not the citta. The body, you know, and the five khandhas are not the citta. The citta is the owner of the five khandhas. And the five khandhas, one of the five khandhas is body. The other khandha is feeling. You know? The next khandha is thoughts and memory. And then there's consciousness. Yeah? These are the five khandhas that the citta is the owner of and is attached to. And we have to cut down on this attachment. So, with this I stop the talk and if somebody has questions, yeah, now you can ask the question. Yeah.
This wonder that you said something about the pain investigation about the body born in us. I can you explain more about this concept? I'm not sure I understand more.
When you are born, yeah? I mean, when you go through this narrow channel, I mean, it is very, very painful. It is both painful for the mother and for the child that is coming out. Yeah? That is the pain. Yeah? The pain of being born. The pain of death is greater because that's why we die. Yeah? But some people even die in this small channel when they come out. Yeah? Because they can't take the pain or they die because of the pain. That's what I wanted to say with this. Okay, other questions? No questions? Then you can read the questions from the website.
So, is sati, is that the same thing as the citta? Or is the citta that has the sati? I don't understand. If the person is very nakana samadhi, for example, and there is just knowingness,
yeah,
what would the citta be? Would the citta be something else that is experienced as experiencing the sati, or is that the sati knowingness the citta itself?
I think, I mean, somebody asked this question, you know, and I think I explained it already. The citta, yeah, the pure citta, there's a difference between the pure citta of the Arahant, and the citta of us, yeah, the defiled citta. Sati is a tool of the citta, yeah. The knowingness, the problem is we don't have so detailed words about this, that's why we use the same word. Yeah. The citta itself is the knowingness that doesn't know of any objects. Yeah? That is the pure citta. Yeah? The moment we come out, yeah, the moment we are in duality, then the citta knows. Yeah? Then the knowingness is knowing of objects. Yeah? So the awareness. Yeah? So I normally don't try to call it, you know, knowingness, yeah? But awareness. We are aware of the breath, huh? And we are aware. Huh? We are aware of this object, and we are aware of that object. Huh? And that is part of the citta, but it is not the citta. Yeah? The citta itself, if it goes, you know, if it goes into its own state, then you can, I mean, whatever you want to call it, yeah? Yeah? Lungta Mahabhor called it Puru, yeah? The one who knows. Yeah? It's a pure knowingness. Yeah? But this pure knowingness does not know of any objects. Yeah? Because there is no duality in this state. Yeah? And how can we describe non-duality, yeah, with dual words? Yeah? So it is difficult. Don't even think about it. Yeah? Just practice, you know, and you will see for yourself. Okay?
The last time, days during my sitting, I noticed involuntary movements like rocking side to side, like waves of energy moving from bottom to top, yeah, side to side. At present, I am not falling during body contemplation. Instead of worrying and telling myself, let the body do whatever it has to do and try to focus on the breath, but I'm not reaching samadhi. After,
yeah,
meditation, I feel good though. Because,
yeah,
if this is sitting only 1 or 2, maybe 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, this is completely okay, but he has to understand that when the body rocks, the citta rocks. The body does not know how to control itself. Whenever there is a movement within the body, it is the citta that moves this body, without us being aware of it. So that is something that he should know. When he is in samadhi, the citta does not rock anymore. The citta is completely still. And it sits completely erect, and there is no movement at all. When he goes further into apana samadhi, people can cut down his body, and he will not even notice it. But in normal samadhi, in upachara samadhi, of course he notices, yeah, if there is a feeling of touch, and he knows that there is a feeling of sensation, there is a feeling of hearing. Yeah? But he normally is not interested in that. But do, you know, if he sits for 2 hours, it will take a long time. Yeah, so practice like this, yeah, and let the body, yeah, in the beginning, let the body do what it does, but have a look, yeah? Have a look, especially, you know, what comes before the rocking. What kind of thoughts, what kind of intention are there in the citta? Yeah? Because if there are no intention, there is no movement of the body. Yeah? The citta is the owner of the body. The citta moves the body, just like the driver of a car moves the car. Yeah? If the driver of the car sleeps, yeah, then the car does not move. Yeah? And if the citta is in samadhi, then the body does not move. Not the slightest. The only thing that is still going on is the breath. That is the biological function of the body, no? The breath and the heart. That is still going on. Okay.
What is the difference between sati and sampajanya?
I think I can't answer that because I don't know what sampajanya is. So please don't ask me any questions about any Pali, you know, and so on. And what is it?
It's really complicated intellectual answers.
Yeah. I'm a very simple-minded person.
It's a double question, next one.
Yeah.
My dad often says that he has good sati because he knows when he's angry.
He knows when he's angry, yeah.
Yet somehow still decides to go along with the anger by unleashing it.
Yeah.
I'm confused if this can be called as having sati simply because he's aware of the anger but still does nothing to stop it.
No, he doesn't have sati. That's not what we call sati. He's mindful of his anger. Yeah? So his mind is full of anger. Yeah? And because it's a burning feeling, he's not aware. If he had sati, he knew that the feeling of anger caused him a lot of burns. And he would not leash it out on somebody else. Yeah? So sati, there we see, you know, sati and awareness are different. Sati is knowingness, knowing what is going on in the heart. So his father has a lot of mindfulness. Yeah, he is mindful about his anger, and he rectifies the anger to leash it out on somebody else. And that is, he is not aware of it. And sati is being aware of things that are going on in the heart. Okay. Mind is full of anger. That's a good one. Same for lust, yeah? It's the same.
That's the next one. A lot of my problems seem to happen because of women. And I take bad decisions because of them. Interacting, trying to impress, and trying to get together with women seems to bring me trouble and bad luck. Can that possibly be true? And what should I do? I also think about ordaining in the future, but not right now.
And how it's true for both sexes, yeah. the only way how to curb that in is by doing body contemplation. I mean, when he sees the object of lust that arouses his lust, take the skin off, and the lust is gone. Take the skin off this object. See the flesh, see the bloody flesh and the bloody mess that is underneath the skin. When you look at women, or when you look at men in this way, there is no lust coming up. No, whatsoever. Instant, boop, gone. Yeah? The moment the image comes back, the full image, then the lust comes back again. And then we replace that image, with an image of a supa, that means the loathsomeness, with an image, that has no skin, or even a rotten corpse, We can use any kind of image that we have. If we have seen accidents, where one arm lies there, or one arm lies there, or knee, or or he's cut in half, then we can take this image, and replace the image. Yeah, the lust is always, always placed on something, on some imagination, on some image that we see. Yeah, so we change this image, and the lust is gone. Yeah? Of course, he gets into trouble. Yeah? I got into trouble all the time. Yeah. Every one of us gets into trouble, with all these relationships that we had. Huh? There's no perfect relationship, otherwise you wouldn't be sitting here. If we had a perfect relationship, we wouldn't be sitting here. Yeah? Okay?
There was one question we just asked that more or less, because there's more... Side question. When contemplating the body as a body, is that when we do a subha practice?
When we That depends on when we can contemplate the body as a whole body, just like I explained in the talk before. When we think about our life, when we think of born, you know, being sick, you know, getting old, you know, and die, that is one contemplation of the body. Disassembling the body into its bits and pieces is another contemplation of the body. And then tear the body apart, you know, to rip off the skin and then look what is underneath it, yeah. Or just contemplating the hair of the head or the hair of the body or the nails and the teeth and so on, yeah. That is contemplation of the body. But just seeing the body as a body is not yet contemplation. Contemplation always means asking questions about what you see. I mean, how does this, when you see this body, then you want to know, how does this, what happens when the body dies? And then the citta gives you the answer. I mean, it shows you the images how a body dies, what is happening. But of course you have to be a little bit good at samadhi. And you have to do some self-contemplation. But that is contemplation. Contemplate means, always means that we have to use our thoughts to ask questions about what we see. Questions about the body. How does the body look when I take the skin off? How does the body look, you know, or how does our face look when I take the eyes out, or when I remove the nose, or when I remove the hair, and so on, and so on. So these are the questions. And then we want to see the answer as an image. Okay? Understood? Verstanden?
Does Nibbana mean extinguishing the flame, and once it's gone, where does it go?
The flame? It's still here. If you leave the world, you know, does the world... If you cut the attachment to the world, does the world disappear? No. There are enough people, you know, there are enough beings, you know, who love this world. You just go off, go into another realm. Where the world does not exist anymore. When the flame exists. What did Lungda Mahabhor said when he got enlightened? The kilesas and all the hordes of the kilesas that gathered in his heart, just vanished. Just went out. And then they look for another being, where they're going. Okay, that's all the questions?
Next one is a long one.
Yeah, I mean, make it short, you know, I mean, the essence of the question. They shouldn't ask the questions, you know, telling her their life stories, yeah?
Yeah, it's a description of experience. Person got really close to the Buddha and then went into a deep state where nothing existed.
Yeah.
Just that, but...
Yeah, but that is still not the deep samadhi, this is still samadhi. If you know of an object, then it is still duality. Du kannst es auch auf Deutsch fragen, wenn die Frage auf Deutsch ist. Was? Yes, you spoke English. And if the question is in Portuguese, then...
dann kann man das Beobachten wieder zurück in die Welt und der Körper kam und all die Gefühle und das kam wieder. Und für die Person ist klar, dass dies ein sehr tiefes Erlebnis war und dass sich der Beobachter quasi vom Körper und all dem getrennt hat.
Ja.
Und als er dann wieder zurückkam, hat sich das wieder vereinigt. Und seitdem sind die weltlichen Dinge eher nebensächlich geworden und er hat auch keinen Willen mehr, wieder zurück ins Leben zu kommen, also wieder geboren zu werden. Es wird alles ein bisschen sinnlos.
Ja.
Oft wird im Herzen nur Leere und auch wenn Gedanken kommen, werden die gleich wieder losgelassen, nicht wieder aufgegriffen und dann kehrt wieder Ruhe ein. Und die Frage ist, ob das wirklich jetzt so ist, dass er aus dem Kreislauf der Wiedergeburt ausgetreten ist, oder ob das nur die Kilesas sind, die ihm da etwas vormachen.
Es ist sehr schwer zu beantworten, ich muss mit ihm persönlich sprechen. Das kann man nicht fragen. Ne? Da muss er ganz genau sein Erlebnis schildern, was genau ist passiert. Weil das Erlebnis, was er geschildert hat, ist nicht das Erlebnis des Eintrittes in den Strom. Hm? Aber vielleicht hat er ja, vielleicht kann er das anders beschreiben. Kann ich nicht sagen. Aber es ist ein tiefes Erlebnis. Und ja, aber er wird sehen, in der Zeit, wenn die Zeit vorübergeht, ne, dann wird er sich wieder an diese Dinge haften, wo er jetzt im Moment etwas freier davon ist. Und dann sieht er, dass es noch nicht der Weg in die Freiheit war. Und wenn, dann ist es höchstens der Eintritt in den Strom. Aber ich kann das nicht sagen. Ich muss mit ihm persönlich sprechen über seine eigenen Erfahrungen. Und wenn die Erfahrung so lange zurückliegt, dann bringt das sowieso nichts. Die müssen frisch sein. Okay? Das Einzige, was wichtig ist, ne, wenn in dem Moment, wenn er Arahant geworden ist, dann fragt er nicht, ob er ein Arahant ist. wenn Arahant jemand anders fragen muss, bin ich jetzt Arahant oder nicht, dann ist er garantiert kein Arahant. Bei Sotapanna, bei Stromeintritt, ne, das ist ein einschneidendes Erlebnis. Ne. Aber auch selbst der Eintritt in Appanasamadhi ist ein einschneidendes Erlebnis. So. Muss nicht unbedingt dasselbe sein. Okay, any other questions? Huh? There are no more other questions? Okay. Then we can stop if there are no more questions. Yeah, I'm in practice, yeah. Use the time wisely, yeah. I mean, you have only this life where you're close to the Dhamma. You don't know what next life, yeah, brings to you. You have lots of karma in your store. So use the time. Yeah? Yak money, huh? Ludwig. You are so German, huh? You know that? We are serious in our practice, but we are not too serious about what is happening. Yeah? We are serious in the way that we always return back to the Buddha, always return to the breath, yeah? But we are not serious about what is happening. Actually, it can be a lot of fun, yeah, to practice, yeah? And that's why we need to go into samadhi to have some relaxation, yeah, where we really can relax. See, you know, it's a nice state of mind. Yeah? That's why we need it. You know, I mean, it's just like people need sleep; they need samadhi, yeah. Otherwise, this constant work, the constant going back. I mean, it can be really tough. Huh? So when we don't have a place where we can rest, where we don't have a place where we can go back home and feel safe, yeah, a safe house, yeah, then it is so difficult, yeah, and makes people go off the path, yeah. So see, samadhi is the importance, yeah. That's where our rest, but that's where our citta can rest and relieve and relax from the world, yeah. And then when we are rested, just like a person, you know, who sleeps overnight, you know, he's rested. I mean, he has a lot of energy to do the work of the next day, yeah? And that's why we go into samadhi, yeah? When we are rested, you know, we do our work of investigation, and then when we are tired, we go back into samadhi and relax and rest, yeah? And then we go back into the work of contemplation, yeah? Okay. So, now. Yeah.